The world of tech is not as complicated as you think. You're just working together with a rockstar technical and non-technical team and solving a unique problem.
Decision-making every minute. Keep track of past, present, and future trends. Maintain a steady deployment speed. Work with designers, developers, and directors, all while aiming for the unicorn status and
still getting home to have a life. Okay, you know what? Maybe it's complicated, but that's what Velocity Podcast is for. I'm Dolapo Amuson, your host, and here we break down the expanding universe of digital technology, how they've changed our lives, and the people making it happen behind the scenes. All right. So my guest today is Philip Wokwetu. We got a meet that was 2021, I think. There was an event that was being hosted, product and tech-wise, and that was my first time of getting to meet Phil. So I would like to have you introduce yourself. Tell everyone about you.
All right. Thank you so much, Dolapo. Hi, everyone. My name is Philip Awopetu. A little about me. Well, currently a product manager with Indicena. So, I mean, it's what else can I put out there? A little bit of a background. I mean, I didn't start as a product manager. I think that's the trait of most product managers. We all just started from like a different type of a background entirely and found ourselves here. So I'm also in that category. So I studied architecture, practiced for a while, and then, found myself in product management. So yeah, that's a bit of a little gist on how.
Okay. Nice. All right. So let me even get started from there. So I studied medicine, right, in Obafemi Awolowo University. Yeah. And here you are, you studied architecture. So it appears a lot of product managers are transiting from non-technical, non-computer science background. So, I mean, how was that for you, right? In terms of making that switch, how did you manage that with yourself, with the people around you, with the work history that you have built up? I mean, what was that like from archi to product management?
I'll say it's a lot smoother from architecture to product management than I would assume maybe medicine or even law, because I have a friend who studied law and then moved to product management. Yeah. So for me, I'll say with architecture, it's a bit more like a smoother transition, because at the end of the day, product management is more like people management. Yeah. It's about you working with different teams. And architecture is really not so different in that way. So especially when you like practicing, so you get to work with civil engineers, you get to work with electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, you get to work with masons, you get to work with artisans. So it's more like working with cross-functional teams was already like inbuilt in me. And it just felt like a different dimension of that same concept. So I would say it was a bit easier for me working with different teams and putting things in place, like on the organizational flow and kind of ensuring that what's supposed to be done is actually done. You know, the whole roadmap idea felt much more similar to me. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Oh, okay. Now that you say this, I really see how that it appears being an architect is the product management of building, for example.
yeah, that's it.
Wow, I would never have seen it that way. That's super enlightening, right? I mean, there's a roadmap, there's a blueprint, there's something that needs to be built. There is a user that you're building it for, who you need to get his specifications. And there are engineers that you need to communicate that to. And ultimately, you need to ensure that you're building profitably.
Wow. Exactly.
All of that. Awesome. That's cool. All right, so moving on. So give me a little background. You're currently with Indicena, and we're going to get back to that. You're going to tell me about what you're doing at Indicena, what's the product like and all. But before we get there, so give me a brief history in terms of how you got to where you are right now. What was that journey like? From the moment you said, I'm going to leave practicing architecture and to the point where you are right now at Indicena. So what has that been like for you?
All right. So I think this decision happened back in 2020. So it was, during the whole pandemic-ish and all.
Oh, yes.
So, pandemic. The super pandemic. So it kind of affected a lot of industries, and even construction wasn't so much allowed because it meant that people had to be in close contact with one another. Yeah. So that was the limitation there. So I think for a while, I think like some 6 months, I had that free space to do nothing. So It was just like, I'll say that moment where you just sit back and just think about your life in a way. So, So I had that moment to look around, and for some reason I was actually thinking of going into product design, because I mean, studying architecture, the whole design process is like inbuilt. So, and then using software wasn't so new to me, so that was quite interesting. So I did a bit of a product design, just like using the software Adobe XD, Figma, either none of those really mattered as long as I could get the result out. But then one of the adverts on Instagram captured my attention. It was something about product management. At that point, I'd never heard about it before. So it was just interesting to kind of explore a bit more into what the different roles in tech were. I think at that moment, I was kind of researching into the whole front-end engineering, product design. And then, of course, that's when product management also came on my radar. So I'll say I did most of these roles like maybe 3 months each within this 6 months time frame before actually landing on product management. So I had to learn HTML, CSS, and even picked up Java for like 3 months. So I quickly grew to understand that I get tired of actually building. So because in a way, as an architect, yeah, you already know what the idea is, you already know what the building is supposed to be, and you have your job is to actually organize people to get it done. So sitting down and writing the code, or even just designing the screens and then having someone review that, it felt like I could do kind of more, and my head was already like seeing the results faster than my body could do it. So it was a bit more interesting to pick up product management. So I read about it, saw that it involves you working with the designers, the front-end, back-end engineers, and then, of course, reporting to stakeholders. And it just felt like you said, it felt like the product management in building in a way. So I said, you know what, let's just give this a try. So I went to one of the product schools, that was Utiva at the time. So that would be probably the way it all started for me, yeah? So Utiva was exceptional. It was the whole cohort system where everyone had like different cohorts and everyone from different backgrounds. That's where I met this friend. She was a lawyer, yeah? So it was really interesting to see people transitioning from different fields into product management. So the whole process was seamless. The training was something that I could relate to, especially in terms of the design discovery or ideation phases and all, because it felt a lot more like how you would maybe start building a house. You're not just putting blocks on the floor. No, you're actually having like a thought process as to where each room is supposed to be. And it felt like the same way in the product itself. You need to understand what product you're building, what client you're building for, what demographic you're building for, the type of market expecting the product. So although there's just a bit more added complexity on its own, it just all felt relatable to me. And I'll say that's how the whole concept of product management sunk into me. So yeah, that was like tail end of 2020, sometime October to December. Yeah. So.
Oh, okay. Nice. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for that, Phil. So let me just pick on your narrative so far, right? Community. So it appears. So you went to Utiva, the Utiva school. I went to Product Dive. Product Dive was my own introduction into product management. As at the time when I was like, I think I want to make a transition. So how important do you consider having a community in terms of making the transition, in terms of getting better as a product manager? I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, and what has been your own experience with the community thing around product management right now?
All right. For me, I would say the community is like an 11 out of 10 when you're just transitioning into product management. It's that important, because at first you don't understand what you're doing. You don't understand what you're getting into. And it's much more interesting to have people that also don't understand what they're going into in the same room. So you feel a bit more confident. Like, yeah, you're all scared, but you just feel safer knowing that, oh, there are other people trying to do the same thing. And with the community as well, it was so helpful, because trying to get the entry role for product management, even at that time, was really hard. And it was kind of the friendships and the relationships that were built. So this person sends links to me, I'm sending links to this person, whatever job I see. Yeah. Like, it was that process of everyone hustling for entry roles And it was crazy. So I would say if I was just left on my own, I would probably have given up on not getting a product manager role because it was that tight. So, but having that community was like a backing in a way. So yeah, I would say 11 out of 10 on that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very, very important. So community, I mean, I really like what it mentioned. You, product management, sometimes getting into it, you're a bunch of people who have no idea what you're doing, trying to figure out what you are doing and like trying to ensure that you're building the best profile in the process. So there's this thing that I consider the, for lack of a better word, the best friend of every product manager, and it's imposter syndrome, right? Because here's the thing, you don't know what you are doing, and you know you do not know what you're doing, and you're just trying to like figure stuff out. So tell me about imposter syndrome for you and overcoming that, because I feel like that's something that can never be overemphasized.
Yeah, so I mean the topic of imposter syndrome is it's everywhere. It's I'll say it happens every time, yeah. And especially in product management, where you get into a company with people that have been there before you, and then just 1 month later everyone is asking you which way to go. So
I know
that, yeah. So that I'll say of course, if you don't have imposter syndrome, something is wrong somewhere.
Exactly.
so yeah, I mean, I actually listened to a podcast some time back on this issue of imposter syndrome because I needed help with that. So I'll just kind of steal some of the responses that they had from there because it helped me. And the idea of the imposter syndrome is don't try to defeat it. It's something that you should embrace because it's never going away. And the thing about imposter syndrome is it's in phases. So the imposter syndrome is, say for example, at the start, you probably don't understand what the whole company is doing. Probably you don't fully understand what the product is about. That's one phase of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
When you look back now, you see that you actually scaled through that phase. Now, when you scale through the phase, you get to a new phase. So it's like always a new phase of imposter syndrome that you get to deal with. So probably at the beginning, the first month or so, it's you not understanding how the processes are, not understanding who is a friend or who is not, not understanding how documentations are done, that you eventually get past that stage. Then you move on to the next stage, could be maybe how roadmaps are done or things like that. Then before you know it, it's, oh, how do we do the customer discovery process? So it's more like the phases of every challenge you have is where an imposter syndrome could potentially pop out from. And you will overcome it because you will do it so often enough that eventually you understand that, oh, this is something that I'm used to. And then you just keep moving on to the next phase. So the earlier you embrace imposter syndrome, it's the better. And what something that even one of the senior managers, or even the head of the VP of products on that podcast said, he still feels like an imposter, but he still has a job. So for some reason, he thinks he's doing the right thing. So yeah, I mean,
I mean, if the VP is still having imposter syndrome, then who am I as a product manager?
So yeah, you see, so you fight it. Like, you're doing a good job. Just calm down, take deep breaths, and yeah, smile. Sometimes you cry, but yeah, just understand that everybody has this problem. So
absolutely. Thanks for that. That's quite insightful. Okay, thanks. So let's move on now to Indesina. So tell me about what you're currently doing. Maybe a little bit of self-marketing, all right? And so just tell me, what's it that you do? What's it that Indesina does? What's it that you do in Indesina? What's your customer persona like? And just to give us a bit of a background.
All right, great. So Indesina is a fintech startup, yeah? And I'll say one thing I love about Indesina is more or less the different approach with tackling the fintech space. So a lot of fintechs actually deal with money, like the whole credit system, the disbursement and collection processes, you know. But what Indesina does is leveraging technology to help merchants or users that wish to get into this space. So say, for example, you're a new person, you want to get into giving out loans or giving out credit, and you don't really have a team to help you build like an app or a platform or anything of that nature. So Indesina gives you that chance to get like a standalone product that you can customize to your own taste and kind of slam your logo on it and get to work immediately. So that's the barrier that we're breaking down, yeah? And that's one of the products we have. And then the other product we have is actually the one I manage, and it's called Decide. So what this does is it analyzes financial information to let you know whether or not you should approve a credit application. So say, for example, if you're trying to apply for a loan, you usually kind of, you're requested like your bank statement, yeah? So sometimes you have like 10, 20, 50, 100 pages of a bank statement, maybe depending on the time frame required by that service. So it's a bit difficult to look through 100 pages of PDFs, just trying to figure out what this person's salary is, or whether or not this person is a salary earner, or even how much he earns, what type of transaction does this person do? So what Decide does is it kind of just analyzes that information, breaks it down into different buckets, shows you the income transactions, shows you the income analysis, the behavioral analysis, even as far as predicting or revealing if this person engages in gambling and how much of gambling is being done. So kind of gives those kind of insights, tells you whether or not he's a salary earner, gives you the breakdown of what salary this person is getting, when he's getting it, the expected date of when this person is getting it, you know, things of that kind of nature. So yeah, it just makes it easier for you to gather more applications, get more things flowing through your own pipeline. So yeah, that's the analytical side of Indecena.
Okay, nice. So it seems like Indecena is a starter kit in that sense, right? So I want, and it seems to be B2B to C, if I could use the term, in the sense that your users are fintech startups, fintech or fintech scale-ups who are looking to get that. Okay. Got that. Oh, awesome. One question: you play in the fintech space, so what do you give us a preview of what you think the next 5, the next 10, the next 20 years would look like in terms of fintech in the Nigerian ecosystem, in developing countries as a whole? I mean, based on your own experience, what you've seen, where do you think the trend is going?
All right. So in terms of fintech, I think there's an exciting movement coming up, and it's the concept of open banking. So being able to kind of like integrate with banks on an API level, get information from them, and kind of make the fintech space more accessible to people to communicate better with the banks. So I'd say that's the exciting part of the fintech space. And I'd say just looking at the future, I'd say in terms of the credit space, things would, in 10, 20 years, things would actually be a bit more organized. That's in the case that, you know, the collection process at the moment is still much of an issue in terms of credit facilities or the credit providers. So there's still these issues of not being able to collect loans, or people are very deceitful with, you know, they apply for a loan or use a different name or something like that. So the idea of having the NIN or BVN into things is already slowly kind of putting like a stop to this type of act. So I'll say technology is catching up to mitigate these issues that businesses are facing. So I'll say that there'll be a bit more organization in how credit is done. There'll be a bit more of a trust process, especially with this buy now pay element coming into play. So
The BNPL wave—it's really going through.
It's getting crazy. So I'm saying in like 10, 20 years, probably Nigeria would be in that same space as the Western world, where you could buy a phone on credit and just like pay for like maybe 12 months or something, and the system understands that it's normal. That's what I see. Because at the moment, the thing is that the concept of buying a product and then paying for it in installments is still not entirely a Nigerian way. Yeah, we prefer to just buy the product upright and know it's our own. So yeah, I would say 10, 20 years, the buy now, pay later, I'm willing to bet on it. It's going to be something. It's going to be huge.
It's going to grow. You touched on the whole NIN BVN thing. Also, because I kind of feel like that has been a major hindering factor towards the development of credit within the Nigerian context. Because first, the government, the businesses, your neighbor, everybody needs to know who you are. And the moment we don't, for as long as we do not have a national, single, unique identifier, right? I believe it's really going to be challenging. So I know that there's a lot around being able to merge the NIN, the BVN, merge all the records together. So I strongly believe that by the time we get that out of the way, we're well on the way to ensuring that we're able to do business much better. You know exactly who you're doing business with in that sense, because you can ask for that detail and everything is recorded. Everything is recorded. Yeah.
Yep.
So Philip is betting that BNPL is definitely going to grow. So we'll hold on to that and see what happens. Let me get a little bit personal before we round off this session. So tell me, everyone is usually crazy about the morning routines of millionaires, right? Like where someone says, oh yeah, this is how much I earn. This is what I do. I wake up 4 a.m. every day and then I go to the gym for 6 hours before I then... So tell me, what, like you said earlier, we're all a bunch of people who are just trying to figure out everything, right? So, of course, I don't expect it to be perfect, but tell me what's your routine that works for you. Maybe someone can just learn from that. So what morning routine or evening routine? Are you morning person, evening person? Tell me what that is like for you.
I don't want to sound like I don't have a life. So that's why I'm trying to see how to place this. Okay. I mean, so I wake up, say, 7:30, sometimes 8 o'clock, because I work remotely. I have a lot of meetings during the day, so it depends on the week exactly. Yeah, so if it's a sprint planning week, it's a really hectic Monday, because I work with about 3-4 teams, and okay. we all kind of have like planning sessions, sometimes an hour, 2 hours, so you can imagine how hectic that whole week might be. So yeah. But the thing is, regardless of the week, there's always like some meeting somewhere I need to help here, I need to assist there. Maybe there's a customer I need to kind of like plug in. If there's a sales call, I need to kind of also join in sometimes. And those kind of eat up most of my calendar space at the end of the day. So I would say my 9-to-5 is more or less giving support and trying to just see where each teams are at. My main work actually starts sometime maybe 10 p.m. because right after work, say I close by 5, yeah, like officially close by 5, I just take a nap, like maybe some 3-4 hours, just to kind of let everything cool down, die off. And then when I wake up, say from 10, it's actually much easier for me that way to start breathing and start understanding, oh, okay, this is what is required, maybe like putting some documentation in place, or just even trying to note what needs to be done next, or preparing for like a presentation the next day. So I'm more of a night person. So
okay.
I would say I have always been a night person. I mean, studying architecture, sleeping in the studio for like, what, 4 years? So I'm just used to that whole nightlife. So I would say for me, that's what works best for me. So yeah, just take a nap after work and feel refreshed and pick up wherever I have to, like from 10 to like maybe 1 a.m. And then I sleep. Nothing too serious.
Okay, that sounds great. I mean, that sounds like a wonderful routine and you seem to have it all figured out. Final question, Philip, and it's tools that you believe have really, really improved your productivity, right? Let me just give a quick one. For me personally, I discovered Cron recently, C-R-O-N, and okay. it actually helps me organize. So what it does is it looks through my calendar and then it can tell me the next meeting I have, and it gives me a countdown to the next meeting, and it's just right on my tasks bar, on my MacBook task bar. Amazing, amazing product. So for you, what's like one product, one tool that you use that you've been like, hey, this has really transformed how I work or how I balance my work with my personal life? So just one or two that you think you want to share.
All right. I mean, I think one problem I have with any countdown mechanism is that I will spend the last 10 minutes just looking at the countdown and counting down with it. So I try to stay away from any digital display of a clock. And because it's always, I don't know, I just have this thing of, say, for example, the time right now is 8:43. I would kind of wait for 8:45 to do something. And if I miss the 8:45, if I see 8:46, I would feel like, you know what, I'll just push it till
9 a.m.
Yeah. So I'm that kind of person. So I'd rather not know what the time is. Yeah. So, but a more productive tool, being that I work remote and I have a lot of team members all over the country, Argentina, US, Germany, I'll say Slack is one of these tools that just, it's the communication tool that we use at Indicina, and it's incredible because the team is responsible. Yeah. So I'd say one really painful thing of the product manager journey is there's a time in your life where you were probably chasing developers for like a whole week, just chasing them, trying to get updates from them, you know. So with at IndieCinna right now, it's I don't think I've ever had to do that. There's that mutual respect and responsibility going on. So with even the tool, you can just drop a message, you know someone is going to respond, tag someone in the conversation, it works out. Say Slack is just like that communication tool, it does it best. And I mean, I don't want to be cliche and say, oh, Jira is also this. I mean, in terms of the tool for tracking anything, I really don't have a preference. I'm more of the pen and paper type of person at the end of the day. So probably during stand-up, when I get the updates, I share my screen and show Jira. But at the end of the day, I just have papers all over my table and I just note things that are really important for me. So I wouldn't say I spend that much time on Jira, except when it's time to like show it like a roadmap presentation or things of that nature needed to be updated.
All right. Sounds great. On the final note about the topic of Jira, I hear that there's a lot of division amongst product teams, engineering teams, as to, I feel like Jira is a love-hate relationship. Some people love it, some people hate it, right? But that's probably discussion for another time. Thank you very much, Philip. It's really been amazing having you on the show and really hearing about your experience. Personally, one of the biggest things I learned here is architecture is actually the product management for building. And that means I'm going to keep my eye out for a lot of people transitioning from architecture into product management. It's probably a wonderful, great role. All right, Philip, one last word for everyone before we leave.
Don't think, just do.
Don't think, just do. Well, just that's do. Funny. Coming from a product manager, aren't we paid to think?
See, trust me, you'll end up thinking so much, you overthink into the whole imposter syndrome. So,
So action is a minute of action is way more important than hours and hours of overthinking. So
far that more. Yeah,
that definitely makes sense. All right, thank you very much, Philip. Wonderful having you. I really appreciate. Have a wonderful one.
And you too. Have a good one. Bye.
That's a wrap on this episode of the Velocity Podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe so you're the first to know when next we drop a latest episode.